Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. DA got that dope.
Go. You already know my protocol.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Fantasy CBB Super Show, presented as always by RotoCurve. I am your host, Walter Waddell, a.k.a. DubDeuces85. Some people just call me by my last name, Waddell, and aren't my gym teacher. Very odd thing to do, but hey, it's been happening lately. It is November 12, 2019. It is after midnight for those of you listening on the East Coast Live. I do appreciate you staying up late with us. We'll be joined by Razzle here shortly. Appreciate the feedback from the first show. I know everybody loves Johnny so very much. You know, he does his best for us. He does very good with his sports betting and his magazine reading and his hot tips there. So he's still gonna be a part of the show this year. But yeah, you know, as we move to a different platform and a more serious format, you know, its part on the show will be a little bit more limited. Those of you that wanted to give me that feedback, it is well received. Thank you. Also, tonight, man, let's recap a little bit, shall we? Let's recap just a little bit. We do want to dive into the slate. There's 5 games on DraftKings tomorrow, 6 games on FanDuel. For whatever reason, DraftKings just does not like using CAA teams. I don't quite understand why, but they missed the golden opportunity to have Oklahoma State versus College Charleston. Which FanDuel surprisingly has. Grant Riller is the stud of Charleston. We'll get into him and talk about that here in a little bit. But let's recap a bit. Today had a lot of value, a lot of interesting value. It seems a lot this year, you know, especially on DraftKings, their pricing is super reactive. And last year it was, for the first month and a half, DraftKings was way underpriced on people, and FanDuel was super tight. Get a dumpster dive if you wanted to play anybody over 8K. And now it's like the site switched. A really glaring example was yesterday with Charlie Moore from DePaul. He was 3-5 on FanDuel, but 8K on DraftKings. He didn't have a very good game because he was in foul trouble. Horrible play on DraftKings, but, you know, his price on FanDuel, he was still okay for you. And it just seems like there's just these guys that are you know, shouldn't be priced like this. You look at DraftKings tomorrow, which we're going to get into, some of the prices, you know, Pete Nance from Northwestern is over 7,000, which is, I don't know why you would ever pay that. You know, if I see a couple games of him against real competition doing well, you know, maybe he'll be worth that price. But we're talking about a guy last year that was 3 to 4K most of the season, and I'm not just going to jump in on the very first slate that he's on after losing to Merrimack and say, yeah, I'm going to pay 7-6 for him. So that's just silly. But we are finding other value on DraftKings and spots they missed. You know, the other day for Arizona State, they had Alonzo Verge as a mid-priced guy. He was actually lower owned than he should have been. That was nice. You know, we had, Chandler Waldron yesterday from Winthrop. He was really highly owned, but he was 3K and he was a slam. But then you got guys like today, like Brandon Mahan, who was on Texas A&M last year. I don't know what it is about Texas A&M. They're just terrorizing us till the first two slates they're on, right? You know, yesterday, Savion Flagg was a bust. It's Wendell Mitchell, who I can't say I'll probably ever play again. I'm very sick of him, was a bust. And then Mahan with the, you know, hey, I used to play for Texas A&M here. Why don't I remind you of that with this bad game? Didn't get as many minutes as I thought he would for UCF today. But the point I'm trying to make is we don't always have to slam value if it's not good. You know, Stars and Scrubs is a very – pro sports approach, I think, to things. People are so used to the NBA where, you know, there's a guy that's out with an injury. Whoever his replacement is, 9 times out of 10, is going to be an absolute slam and make value. And that's not always the case in college basketball when a guy's out. And it's not always the case when you come across the guy who's been beating up on lesser competition and might look good, but when he faces a team that's better or, you know, a major conference school, and then he starts. So you really have to be careful with that. Today would have been a great time to fade James Wiseman, a great time to fade Peyton Pritchard, and it's looking like a great time to fade Trace Tingle. Now, with all the value that was out there, you should play at least one. I ended up playing two. I did fade Wiseman because I didn't think this was such a great matchup for him. He actually did really well when he was on the floor, but he was in foul trouble. And then Peyton Pritchard was also in foul trouble. The refs were thinking that people came to that game to see them, apparently. It would have been very smart to go with somebody like Get. And I also used Najee Marshall, who was also in foul trouble in the first half, go figure. But get someone like Daniel Aturu off Minnesota. He had a monster game today. I have him on several Dynasty leagues, which is wonderful. You see people on Twitter harassing me about trading for him. And you know, I'm not saying that I won't trade him, but I'm definitely not going to give him away for nothing. But I should have used him over someone like Pritchard. And then I could have upgraded Mahan to somebody like, you know, Cameron McGusty from Miami, who I was definitely looking at today, but, you know, he took so many shots the first two games. But, I wasn't sure if that was a real thing or if that was one of those, you know, they'd beaten up on some other schools that weren't quite good type of thing. And it must be real because likes didn't look too good today, and it may be McGusty's team. So that type of 2v2 would have been better, and it would have made my lineup a lot more balanced. To me, I had to heat check Peyton Pritchard, so I'm not super regretting it. I'm definitely regretting playing Daniel Purifoy. I did play Isaac Okoro for Auburn, which was great. He was lower owned in the $50 GPP today. I'm not too sure why. I'm not going to argue it, though. I'm happy. Looks like in cash games he is a little higher owned, so that's good. He was a very smart, sharp play. I think Auburn is going to be a big tilt for us, though, because you saw Austin Wiley was in foul trouble. I think he got about 12 minutes of court time before he did foul out, something that he had an issue with last year. So Anfernee McIlmore, who was 3-9 today on DraftKings, was a solid play, ended up playing well, got 21 fantasy points. That definitely pays off that 4K tag. Purifoy, he wasn't good today. His threes weren't falling, and then Okoro was so ham that he was grabbing every single rebound, and then McIlmore was actually shooting the threes when he was on the floor. So Purifoy was doing a lot of standing around. I went back and watched some of that game online, and he was just standing around. So I don't think that I'm ready to say, oh, well, he's a bad player or anything. But, yeah, I wish that I would have arranged my lineup a little bit differently to balance it out, because I personally didn't want to have more than one or two Auburn players in my lineup, even though that was a good matchup for them in a smash spot. They almost lost. The Curl actually saved them by hitting a shot at the end and getting fouled. And it wasn't a smart idea to play more than one or two because, you know, they just didn't make value. So I think it's going to be that case with Auburn a lot this year, where we can only play, you know, one guy. And I think Isaac Okoro is definitely a guy to watch. He'll probably be chalky going forward. With the way DraftKings react to pricing, is probably going to gank him up to 7K, and then he won't be playable for a while until he comes back down. So, yeah, a lot going on. That's kind of where things are at. The Oregon State-Oklahoma game is still going on. I believe UNLV is getting ready to wrap up. I don't want to talk about that game just yet because I need Donnie Tillman to go off to salvage my cash games, and I just don't want to look right now. I'm scared to look. Let's patch through Eric through the line. How you doing, man? How was your night, Mr. Razzle?
It's going all right. It's not amazing, that's for sure.
Yeah, the first week was just like scorching hot. It was like, man, I miss this, you know, because it makes me feel like college basketball gives me such a an unrealistic expectation of how DFS is. Because then I go out and I try NFL and I try NBA and I'm like, wow, this shit's hard. You know, this isn't easy. But then you go and play college and you're like, you have a high win rate and you're feeling good. But even with the higher win rate, you still have days like today. So yeah, it was a humbling experience for sure. You know, even watching this Oklahoma game, Trace Tinkles a little bit. You know, all the top studs were just a little underwhelming today. And then I know a few people, especially in this $50 tournament that I'm sweating, played Harmon, and it looks like he doesn't even want to play today. So it's really frustrating when you get these guys that are, you know, having their mega floor games. How much stock do you put into, you know, Oklahoma? They played a team like UTSA, who, you know, I really love, even though they were not winning games. But you see Harmon, you see Reeves, they just blow them up because it's a fast-paced team that doesn't play defense. But then they're coming into a game against Oregon State that has some guys who can defend. You know, how much stock do you put into, hey, I can't play Reeves at, you know, 7K, for example, or whatever he is, against Oregon State, where you wouldn't mind playing against UTSA. You know, strategy-wise, how much do you take into account that?
I mean, for Reeves, as your example, I took that into account a lot. Like, going into the Minnesota game, where Reeves was like 8K or something on DK. I don't remember his exact price.
Yeah.
Through the roof just based off of his monster game in the opener. You know, somebody like that who, you know, transferred from Wichita State to all of a sudden put up some big game, there's no way I was going to pay for that, you know. And I had already tweeted tonight, looking at tomorrow's slate, like Theo John is priced at 7,300 on DK because their pricing goes off the fact that he put up, you know, whatever. I don't remember what his total was in the first game, but he had 8 blocks or whatever. So, like, they're basing it just off of that. And, you know, it's kind of looking at guys' track records, right? Like, you know, a lot of these guys are really good at what they do, but, like, what was their ceiling prior to this blow-up game? Like, do they have it in them to do that again, or is that just a complete outlier? Because you do have to consider, like, they might have gone off on a weaker opponent, but that could give them a ton of confidence coming into the next game as well, right? And if you have confidence when you're shooting the basketball, good things tend to happen. So, you know, hot streaks can happen, you know, on the court. But, I don't know, it's tough with these early season schedules with them bouncing, you know, one game against an elite competition. All of a sudden now they're playing one of the lowest teams on the KenPom rankings or whatever. And all of a sudden the next game they're going to be playing like a top 40 team or something. So...
Yeah, and it used to be on DraftKings especially still pretty easy because, you know, their pricing, we kind of figured out it was like based off of every other game. So you would get a blowout game or a good, you know, a game where Theo John drops 40 and then he wouldn't adjust until 2 games later. So you might be able to get him again for 4 or 5 and then he has like 20 and then the game after that he jumps up. And now it's like they're doing it. They must have a new pricing algorithm or they hired a new pricing guy or something, but now they're jacking people way up. I mean, Pete Nance is 7-9. I don't think I ever would have saw, you know, a thought that he would be that price, especially this early. And you know, at the end of the year we might say, "Oh, remember we could roster Pete Nance at 7-9." But right now it just looks absolutely ridiculous. I'm looking at the forward pricing on DraftKings right now. Jordan Nora at 8-8, you know, that's pretty expected. From Villanova at 8-3. I mean, he had a great first game, but I don't think that that's a good price to pay for him against Ohio State. Stephen Enoch at 8-1. He's having a hell of a season to start, but Enoch at 8-1, like Pete Nance 7-9, you know, Sadiq Bey 7-6. Like, these prices are just wild. And I think we really have to, tonight's a good example, we really need to switch the way that we build lineups, I think, until either prices normalize or maybe this is what life on DK is like now. Because, yeah, I used to be able to just slam, you know, a bunch of stud guys at 6 and 7K that were slow to price up. And now it's like they're pricing them too far up, too fast. And I think we're going to find a lot of you know, value in the 5 to 7K range in building balanced lineups. You and I were kind of talking before the show, and I mentioned that last year I had a lot of success early on just doing balanced lineups and not doing stars and scrubs. So I think I'm going to go back to doing a lot more of that where I don't have to dip down and take a guy like Brandon Mahan, who, like you said, he might not have been a bad play, but it maybe not have been the optimal cash play because we really didn't know how many minutes he was going to get, per se. You know, he's still learning his role on this team, and we just it was a tougher opponent against Miami. You know, we gotten slapped a couple of times with these cheap guys. You know, Hemphill the other day for Green Bay. I haven't even bothered to look because it's pointless now, but I think we don't know if he got hurt, he got benched, what the deal was, but... you know, you go down to that level, you're really risking. Did he? Okay. You go down to that level, you're really taking quite a big risk. Okay. But there are some guys, you know, even like Anthony Gaines from Northwestern, whose price went up last year. He's 4-3 right now, and it sounds like he's on a minutes cap of some sort from an injury. So there is still value to be had, but I'm still going to be looking at, I think, the balance type of thing. So let's get into this slate here. Villanova versus Ohio State. It's going to be a slow-paced game. KenPom has it 66-65 in favor of Ohio State. Right now, very early, so you can't really, you know, derive a lot from this. But pace-wise, 305th ranking for Ohio State, 287 for Villanova. And I was just mentioning on the Villanova pricing, you know, the forwards especially. Jeremiah Robinson-Earl, a very highly ranked prospect for them. He's a great player, but I don't know that I want to pay 8-3 for him. I do see, you know, game log chasers are going to be like, well, this dude dropped 42 fantasy points in the first game. Against Army, yeah, he sure did. But now he's going to be playing Ohio State. This game is going to be super slow. I don't know that he's going to have the 24-13 in the bag unless they somehow get, you know, Caleb Weston in foul trouble. He's certainly a guy I want to watch, but I need his price to normalize. We've played this game last year with Sadiq Bey, Cosby Roundtree, and Jermaine Samuels. seems like it's a tilt. You take one and the other guy blows up. So Sadiq Bey at 7'6" is one that I could see hurting a lot of people's feelings. Jermaine Samuels is interesting. 6'9" still feels like a lot. Basing off last year, he was coming up at the end of the tournament time. He was really becoming a hot player and somebody you could rely on, but I still don't really want to pay this price for him either. Cole Swider at 6'6". I mean, these just feel like ludicrous prices. Crosby Roundtree's only 4K, but he's just not getting the minutes in that first game. And it's hard to tell because we don't know if he will later on. All it takes is for somebody like, you know, Sadiq Bey to get in foul trouble, and Roundtree could potentially get 25 minutes. So I don't know that we can really dip down and use him. If I want to use anyone from Villanova, I'm probably looking at, you know, Colin Gillespie at 5'9". He is somebody that we can, you know, expect 30-ish minutes from. If it's a close game, probably even more. He had 26.5 fantasy points against Army in that first game. Shot 3 for 11, 3 for 7 from downtown, and, you know, contributed in every category other than that. So I definitely feel like if you need to have Villanova exposure, that's probably your guy. Still waiting to see if Brian Antoine is going to take a medical red shirt. If he ends up playing in the slate, you know, not tomorrow, obviously, but down the road, he's a guy that we can revisit then, but he's a highly ranked prospect as well. For Ohio State, I have been a very big DJ Carton fan from day one. Did use him on the first slate. You know, he didn't wow us by any means. He had 16.75 fantasy points at 5'2". He had 23.75 in the last game, and he's pretty much locked up the backup point guard role and playing some two guard as well. He's had 25 and 22 minutes over the last two games, 4-4 on DraftKings. I'm definitely looking hard at DJ Carton as my main value choice just because I don't, like I said, I'm looking at it right now. I don't feel I want to dive on any underneath that. CJ Walker is 4-3. He had been getting the starts, but I haven't really been that impressed with him. You know, he's had some foul troubles, some turnover issues. He just Carton, you can tell Carton has the look. I mean, he's a highly ranked recruit, right? He's got the look of a guy that's just going to, you know, have one of these explosion games, and everybody's going to be like, oh, and then Rothstein's going to say buy stock now and all this other stuff. But he's a guy that I think we can get in on now, especially with Andre Weston out with the fractured skull, that very serious injury. Or eye socket, I should say. Surprisingly, he's only going to miss 2 or 3 weeks is what I was reading on Twitter. But, yeah, with him out, there should be some additional wing minutes as well that maybe Carton can grab there. Caleb Weston at 7'4", that's still a decent price for him. You know, there's a little bit of a pay-up against Villanova, but that's generally where his price has been most of last year as well. Obviously, the risk with him has always been fouls. Looks like he's been able to control that so far. The Cincinnati game, he shows 4 fouls. You might be tempted to say, oh, well, 4 fouls. He didn't really get into foul trouble much that game, though. You know, they were kind of spread out. But 8-11 the first game, and the second game 13-13, granted against a lower opponent. I definitely like Caleb Weston. I feel like he's a safe option if you don't want to go up to that next tier of forwards who will, you know, the group with him, Nance, with Swider, you know, Sadiq Bey. I'm not playing those guys over Caleb Weston at the same price range. It just seems crazy. I guess, you know, they don't have your guy anymore, but Jesse Ahrens is there at 3-4. Maybe he sees some minutes additionally with Andre Weston out. But he played 18 minutes last game, but he's been managing to be negative in each of his two games. Negative 0.5 and negative 1 for an average of negative 0.8. So it doesn't inspire a lot of confidence there. At 4-3, maybe we can look at Alonzo Gaffney, another guy that potentially could do well. He had 10-8 in there for the last game for 18.5 fantasy points. And then also at 3-4, maybe you can look at E.J. Liddell, who was another, you know, semi-ranked recruit. Didn't have a great game against Cincinnati in the first one, but 18 minutes, he had 4-5 and 2 blocks in their last game. So there's a couple of options here for GPP. I'm not paying 6-1 for Kyle Young either. I know he looked like, you know, the Michael Jordan against Cincinnati out there, but I just don't see that happening for him again. So for me in this game, I would definitely consider Caleb Weston with everybody who's priced in his range, and then DJ Carton is I'm going to stop short of calling him a slam, but he's certainly going to probably end up on my main team. First look, what are you doing with this game?
I mean, I'm with you on Carton and probably some Weston. Then I'm going to decide between Gaffney and Liddell. I might just use them both in different things, but I feel like one of those two is probably going to step up without Wesson. last I read that they thought Muhammad might find into the starting lineup, but Muhammad's really just a shooter. I think I would prefer to take a shot with a couple of those guys at cheap, GPP-wise. Villanova, I just don't know what to do yet. You know, both of their main guards both went, 3 for 11 in the first game, so they're taking shots. So I might just be tempted to use Justin Moore more than Gillespie, I guess, since he's 1,200 cheaper. But I think I'll use Jermaine Samuels. I know it's tough to think about playing him at 6,900, but, you know, he put up over 31 fantasy points and only took 4 shots from the field. So seems like he's going to do a little bit of ball handling. He had 5 assists in that game. So that's probably where I'm looking.
Yeah, and that's one thing about Samuels. He's had games last year where he did put up 20-plus fantasy points, and he would have, 2 points, but double-digit rebounds, couple of blocks. He's just one of those guys you can rely on to get you those other statistics, which is nice. Let's move to the Connecticut-St. Joe's game. This is going to be by far the fastest game on the slate. KenPom has an 83-68 in favor of UConn. They're 88th in tempo right now. St. Joe's 11th. St. Joe's new coach. They earned Martelli. A lot of people didn't like that new coach, Billy Lange. They have had they won their first game against Bradley 86-81, then they lost to Old Dominion 82-69. And there's two guys jumping off the page right away. Ryan Daly, who has played 85% of the minutes. He has a usage rate of 33% and a shot rate of 31%. He's been doing, quite a bit of things for them, and he's priced accordingly on DraftKings for sure, 8.4. But I don't know, and UConn's defense is good historically. In the first game, they showed that too. But this is a guy who took 34 shots in the last two games, 9 for 20, but also 2 for 14 against Old Dominion. And Old Dominion's usually a team that plays slow, hard nose basketball, and they play defense. So he shot 2 for 14, but he still put up 40 fantasy points, 8, 13, and 11. Damn near had a triple-double, even though he couldn't make any shots. So that's it. You know, I see that kind of usage, and I really pride myself on being able to play lower-owned guys who are in his range that play for smaller schools that people don't really know, and they look at that price and say, that's too high for this guy against that opponent. So Ryan Daly's definitely in that category for me. As being an in-play guy that won't have a lot of ownership tomorrow, I don't believe. This should be a contest with a lot of points scored. You know, even in the loss, if they're going to score 70, that's still pretty appealing to me. At forward, they've got Lorenzo Edwards, who's 7'7 on DraftKings here. He is also a guy with pretty heavy, shot rate, 25%, usage right around 21. He's a much better shooter, and he takes a ton of threes. Look at his numbers real quick. 7 for 9 in the game against Old Dominion. First one, he was 0 for 6, 3 for 10, but 8 for 13 against Old Dominion. So he's had 32 fantasy points and 36. Definitely more of a scorer, but you see he's had an average of 2 blocks a game and 1 steal. So he does contribute in those areas as well. I would much rather, I think, pay for Daly just because of that, triple-double upside there kind of jumps off the page. But I think either one of those guys is good in tournament play. And what it worked the other night when you stat guys, like for Louisiana Monroe, I was all over Ertl, who was very low owned, but you could have stacked him with J.D. Williams, which is something I considered, but I just couldn't quite pull the trigger. A lot of times you can pair these guys that have such a high usage compared to the rest of the team and kind of secure yourself with, 70 fantasy points amongst two players, sometimes more. So that would be a potentially good stacking option. Taylor Funk's a guy from last year. He's had some blow-up games at 4-3. I don't think I'd probably use him. And then Cameron Brown at 4-7, who's their other guard, playing over 30 minutes. He's a guy taking double-digit shots and a ton of threes also. He just hasn't been very efficient in doing so. He had 28 fantasy points the first go-round and then 13 against Old Dominion. Didn't stop him from shooting a ton, though. So it looks like St. Joe's lets a get-out run and take a ton of shots. So there's going to be a lot of rebounding opportunities. St. Joe's interior looks pretty awful in the two games. If he can stay out of foul trouble, an issue he had last year for UConn, Josh Carlson. He was the guy that threw my first look lineup. I saw him at 6'8", a little higher maybe than I'd want to pay to start, but I think I could justify paying this price. If it was between him and Jermaine Samuels, who I also like, as you mentioned, I think I would be taking Josh Carlson here in this spot just because they're going to score, per KenPom, 83 points compared to what Villanova is expected to score, 65, 20 additional points. as something that you can recommend? You know, you see there's going to be a ton of shots taken. His rebounding totals are going to be high. Probably going to get some block shots, and it's going to get some putbacks. So Carlton is definitely high on the list for me. I think you could probably use Tyler Poley. He's 5'1 here on DraftKings, seeing 30 minutes. Another guy who should get some rebounds. He's generally in the past been really three-point shot reliant, but it looks like, you know, at that price you could give it a shot. Sidney Wilson is there at 5K. You know, some of these guys are from last year where they were cheap. Christian Vitale is 8'5". I know he dropped 44. I don't think I would pay that. Brandon Adams at 6K is also a playable option. James Bouknight is their stud incoming guy, but he's just not going to play right now. He's suspended. You've also got Altri Gilbert, who's only 4'1". Pretty interesting in 31 minutes of the action last game. He didn't have a very good game, but this is a guy that has shown 30 fantasy point upside, so at 4'1", that is definitely something that I would be interested in. And then also, I'm sure how to pronounce it correctly, so I'm sure it's wrong, but Akok for UConn is only 4'4". Now, half of his fantasy points in the first game in 25 minutes of action did come from blocks. He had 4 block shots, 4 points, and 4 rebounds. But, again, another guy in the 4K range that you could use for value. So it looks to me UConn is the spot where you can dip down and get some cheap guys, you know, that you can reasonably expect to give you production. You haven't had a chance to look at this game too much, but, you know, what are you doing, the UConn guys? A new UConn team that should be better than last year, I would think. Gets a fast-paced, high-scoring game. Are you going to be all over this one or what?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be all over Gilbert at 4-1 in an outpaced game. I mean, at that price, he still went 4X in the first game, and he shot terribly, you know, 2 for 9 from the field, 0 for 4 from 3. And if he's going to play 31 minutes, even in a, you know, a 22-point blowout win, I can't ignore that with the pace of this game. And because of the pace, I think Vitale is in play, even though, you know, 8,500, you know, he's definitely priced just based purely off of that 44-point game where he had 7 steals, so everything's going to be skewed a little bit. But with it being so up-paced that I feel like he can still pay off. I don't really think he's a cash play. But, yeah, I'm kind of with you. I'm going to choose between Carlton and Poly from their forwards. You know, there's definitely going to be a lot of rebounds in there. I don't know that there's going to be as many block shots. You know, if St. Joe's is taking a lot of outside perimeter shots, there isn't going to be quite as few. So I'm not really sure if Akok is somebody that I'm going to be on. But I know he's had a lot of hype coming in. So 44 is definitely a nice price to pay. I just don't know that, you know, if you count up the number of threes that St. Joe's took, like, that kind of limits the number of shots at the rim that he's going to have a chance to block.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it might be where you know, he doesn't get as many block shots, but maybe that rebounding number goes way, way up higher. Looks like the starting lineup that he rolled out against Sacred Heart was Tyler Poley, Gilbert, Vitale, Akok, and Carlton. And then Brandon Adams played 26 minutes off the bench, and looks like they're about 7 deep with Wilson getting roughly 15 to 16. Of course, that could change as we get more games and more data. But, yeah, I mean, seeing that they're probably going to be a real tight, you know, rotation, I see no reason why you wouldn't want to get multiple pieces of UConn here. Are you going to use any of the St. Joe's guys?
I think I'm going to have to. I mean, Daly makes a ton of sense. I like Edwards. You know, he definitely shot it better, especially from the perimeter, than Daly has. You know, Daly's 0 for 11 to start this season from 3. But it's really just going to be those two, I think. You know, because I don't really feel like I need to go to Taylor Funk at 4,300 when I can, you know, get value from Gilbert and then Carton or somebody from the first game we talked about. Maybe
yeah.
Miles Douglas, but he struggled against ODU and, you know, kind of laid a stinker after having a 28.5 fantasy point game against Bradley in the first game. So, I mean, if I'm game stacking this in a GPP, then I think Douglas is probably my third piece. Like, if I'm going to go with 6 guys from this game because of the pace, he's probably my third piece from St. Joe's.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, he's hovering around 21% usage rate and right around 19% shot rate. And yeah, first game obviously looked good, but could be one of those guys that against better competition he just doesn't quite do as well. So definitely a lot of fantasy goodness there. Next game, Indiana State versus Louisville. I had them picked in our show last week as a potential Final Four team. They certainly looked the part. I know that they haven't played anyone really super otherworldly right now, but they definitely look good. 85-62 is the KenPom projection. Louisville 171st in pace. They get a pace bump against Indiana State 66th. I'm gonna start with Louisville, the more familiar team with people. So they've taken care of business, 87-74 against Miami, and then Youngstown State, 78-55. Now, the obvious play, Jordan Nora at 8-8. I still like him quite a bit, but again, I came to the realization today that I maybe not need to pay. If DraftKings going to jack all these prices up, I think the edge is going to be finding the more ignored, balanced approach, and I just don't know if I absolutely need to have him in my lineup. I don't think he's a bad play by any means. I think he's probably a lock to get you close to 4X no matter what. I just don't know if he's going to have the upside to him any higher. Enoch, again, another play where if you put him in your lineup, I'm not going to argue about it, but I just 8-1 is such a high price. And Dwayne Sutton at 6-5, I'm not going to be using. We had this issue with him last year. He'll have games where he puts up 45, and it's like, damn, I'm so happy I used him, or damn, I can't believe I didn't use him. Then you're going to have games where he puts up 12 fantasy points like he did against Youngstown in 31 minutes. I don't know how he could put up so few fantasy points in 31 minutes of action. Usually it was foul trouble that he had last year. You don't see it right now. It's just ineffectiveness. I didn't watch the game, but I bet if I went back and watched tape, I would see him standing around a shit ton. That's something he would do a lot last year. So I'm willing to bet he was just standing around doing nothing. So don't be surprised if he has a good game tomorrow, but I'm just not going to pay 6-5. When he comes back down to that 5K range where I'm okay with him busting, if he does, then that's fine. But I'm not – there's no way – it was a short slate that day. I did have him in my lineup, unfortunately, and he reminded me why I don't need to do that anymore. I do really like Samuel Williamson for Louisville, the freshman, one of the – you know, from their heralded classes. I was angling for him in our Dynasty League, and he got taken in the round that I was looking to get him, and I think he's going to end up being a really solid player for them this year, and especially in years beyond. 19 and 17 fantasy points in the two games, just over 20 minutes, but you see he's taken 9 shots and 8 shots in each last game, so he's looking for his shot when he's out there and he's being aggressive. We're still waiting for young KD, a.k.a. Malik Williams, to come back. I think that when he does, we're going to get him right around that 4K. You know, I don't think DraftKings is going to react fast enough. I think if he is okay to play, it'll be like a GTD kind of situation, or maybe he's questionable, and then he's going to play, and that's when we're going to be able to get him at a cheap price. So be on the lookout for that. I don't think it's tomorrow, but, he's a guy that when he is ready to go, he's going to be a very, very good player. Lamar Kimball was only 4-9. Now, if you would have told me to start the season before they had any games that he was going to be that cheap, I would have been like, wow, we're probably going to be rocking with him a lot. Last year when he played St. Joe's, he was a huge scorer and a do-everything kind of guy. Grad transfers over to Louisville, and I think he's just there. I misdiagnosed his role. I thought he was going to be more of a secondary scorer for Nora and a high usage guy, and they're just not using him in that capacity. Granted, he's not shooting the ball very well either to start, but he is looking to pass, which is good, and I think they kind of be a guidance counselor, if you will, which is good for them, good if you're a fan of Louisville, but if you're a fantasy player like us, I don't know that that's going to work out too well. He will have games where he does absolutely explode, or if Louisville needs a bucket and the young guys are, they've hit a wall, they will be able to go to him, and I think that's the reason why he's on the team. Right now against the easier opponents, he's just not needed. So I don't think we're going to need to use him tomorrow. Darius Perry, there were people on him, I believe it was Sunday afternoon slate or morning slate, one of them that used him. Kudos to them at 4-6. He did put up 37 fantasy points. I'm not ready to crown Darius Perry as a regular play. His minutes are there. He's over 25 minutes, but I think as Williams comes back and some of that usage and the rotations change, that maybe that levels off a little bit. GPP-wise, maybe he's still in play. We'll get Razzle's take on that here in a second. For Indiana State, they bring back, Tyree Key, Jordan Barnes, and Christian Williams, the transfer from Iowa. Last year, he was 3K and had his explosion welcome out party, I believe, against TCU during a preseason tournament. He's 6'4 now. I wouldn't think that I'd want to play him at that, but I kind of feel like he's a decent play at 6'4". He did have, against Dayton, which is a good team, Obi Toppin, our guy. 29 fantasy points in 30 minutes, 5 for 10 from the field. He had 14, 8, and 2 with a steal. So I'm feeling some Christian Williams in this. Tyree Key is there at 6'2". He's an okay play. And then Barnes at 8K, he had 37 fantasy points. He's the, their higher usage. Kind of does a lot of, scoring when they need a bucket. But they have these other scores, so I don't know that we need him. Tyree Key has a 36% usage rate after the first game, so he's there too. But I definitely feel like my Indiana State play is Christian Williams, if anyone. And then the Louisville side, like I said, Williamson, I definitely want a piece of this if they're going to score 85 points or more, but it's just the pricing seems like it's pretty correct and or a little too high for these guys. How are you approaching this one?
Yeah, Louisville's projected to put up the most points on the slate, right? So you think you have to have a piece of them. The problem is the pricing. I can't use Enoch since he's so close to Nora. Like, if I'm going to pay him the 8Ks, I'm just going to take Nora's safety with it. Plus, I think Nora has the higher ceiling. So, I'm kind of with you on Sutton. I probably will use him somewhere just because I know what his upside is, but I also know what I'm most likely going to get out of him. Maybe McMahon's the right play for Louisville. I don't know. At 5,800, he might be the safest play out of the group. He's made 4 threes in each of the first 2 games. Basically been just over 4X in each of them. And he's one that actually got a price drop from the last game where everybody else was getting priced up. He actually dropped. I kind of thought Kimball was going to be, used a bit more coming over as well. But I guess that says a lot for what Darius Perry's been able to do, and held him off a little bit to secure minutes for himself. Now, I definitely would have never saw a 37 fantasy point game out of him last game. I had 0 shares of him, but, maybe at 5'3", he's still viable. With Indiana State, it's a tough matchup, and there's should get blown out, but with them, their usage is so centralized to their top few players. When you look at the rest of their team, like, they just don't have guys that do a whole lot. Like Laravia, I guess, is the only other name that you didn't mention. I feel like I have to use somebody. It's probably Williams. Could be Key, I suppose. But I'm just going to have to kind of go by matchups and see who might be able to avoid foul trouble the most and go that route.
Yeah, and looking over at FanDuel pricing, Samuel Williamson is 4'7", which is pretty decent. And then Lamar Kimball is 4'1". And usually the old FanDuel construction was to just super punt one spot. I watched Hamtron do this a lot last year. Dumpster dive one spot, and if you got points out of it, cool. But then you took, 2 or 3 upper tier because of it, and they just exploded, and you would still cash. Do you still think that's viable with FanDuel pricing seemingly soft? And could you take Kimball at 4-1, or do you think it's, with the pricing changing, you don't need to necessarily just give up a spot there?
I think the way that it's been so far this season and the success I've had on FanDuel is, I've been jamming in somebody who's been under 4K and then generally somebody in the low 4Ks and then just going, all top-tier guys, going real stars and scrubs. But it's been working on FanDuel, but not really on DK. It's because I think on FanDuel, like, a lot of the top-tier guys are all similarly priced to the guys that are right below them, right? There's not a big drop-off like on DK where you go from 9K to, 6,800. Where on FanDuel, it's more like dropping from 8K to 7,200. So I haven't gotten a chance to kind of look into the FanDuel pricing for this site, but right away I think I'd go with McMahon at 5,200. you know, I'm definitely more willing to play Williamson over on FanDuel. That's a big enough price difference that, you know, 4X should be attainable for him. It is kind of tough to see that Indiana State has the three guards priced higher than McMahon in a tough matchup to where I don't know that I can use them on FanDuel.
Yeah. So it still works. So that, cause that, like when I actually did play FanDuel, I would kind of mirror that and do it, like I said, almost a throwaway spot. It didn't matter. So that still works on FanDuel. It's good to know. I played a couple of sites there and I thought I was going to play more on FanDuel, but the contest sizes and prize pools just haven't warranted me to, you know, not that I'm like, you know, some highbrow, I'm not going to play these prize pools, but it's, you know, as far as my time goes, I want to put in and invest as much time as I can with my daytime job or whatever, you know, on the DraftKings, because that's where the prize pools are. So I haven't been on FanDuel as much as I would have liked, but I've definitely been playing there, especially yesterday when you've got something like, you know, a guy that's 8K on DraftKings and 3K on FanDuel. And it's like the site's just completely flopped so far this year. It's very odd. All right, let's go to next game here. Northwestern versus Providence. This is a game that doesn't really excite me all that much. Ken Pom has a 69-63 for Providence. They're 158th ranking in pace. Northwestern 312th after the first game. Again, don't take that as gospel because that could change real quick. Alpha Diallo is his predictable high price. He was, you know, over 9K a lot last year. He's 9-2 to start here on DraftKings, but he does have a 54 and a 40 in his bag to start. You know, double doubles in both 19 and 14, 15 and 10, with some, you know, high quality blocks and steals numbers. So Diallo is always going to be a guy that you can consider using. It is weird seeing David Duke at 7-8. You know, unfortunate name, as we always joke, but that's a very high price to pay for him. I do realize 31 and 38 fantasy points is juicy, but we do need to look at his opponent. They're going to be playing, you know, on the road against a very slow-paced Northwestern team that should be pretty decent, above average, you know, defensively. So I don't want to be paying that price. A.J. Reeves at 5'5 is appealing. And then, you know, Luane Pipkins, the transfer from UMass, you know, he's the all-everything stud over there. Obviously, his role is going to be different here for Providence. You know, his minutes, you saw he played 26 and 19, but I think that's probably, you know, a product of the blowout. I would expect him to play closer to 30 tomorrow. And, you know, being 6'3", he had 36 fantasy points in the first game, just 20 in the second, didn't need him against NGIT. I love him at that price. This is a guy that I'm going to probably be putting in my main team and not having any regrets about it. Now, Reeves is a guy that had, you know, a lot of upside last year, shot very well from three. You know, mixed results so far this year. My worry with Providence, you know, and it was last year, they had so many guys, they would go 10, 11 deep sometimes, and you get all these guys that play 18 to 22 minutes. And that looks to be the case in the first two games, but they're going to be playing a much closer game with Northwestern. They should still win, but being that, you know, that they're still going to be, you know, somewhat deep. So maybe temper your expectations on some of the higher price guys. And then Melik White, another guy who played roughly 20, 21 minutes in the two games. You know, he was a value darling last year. He was continuously under 4-5, and he was having these games of 25, and it was a cheat code for a while. And he may end up turning into a cheat code again. But if he's not scoring the basketball, he shot 57% and 66% in the last two games. If he's not scoring, he really isn't going to make value. So the scoring-reliant guys make me a little bit nervous, you know, especially this year. But 4-4, you certainly have to consider him. But Pipkins is definitely my number one Providence play. Nate Watson is out. You know, would have too bad because 4-8 is a pretty nice price for him if he was in. But he's sidelined indefinitely right now. Khalif Young is absorbing those minutes and usage at 4-9. You know, he's a pretty decent play. 25 minutes has been right around 20 fantasy points. You're going to see a lot of Providence players, 20 fantasy points, 20 minutes. 20 minutes, 20 fantasy points. That's just kind of the Providence way. Yeah, Emmett Holt there at 4-7, another guy who's been right at 20 fantasy points and 20 minutes. Go figure. So you have all these different options here. You got Jimmy Nichols at 3-7. He's had upside in the past as well. Providence is doing some nice things. Next year they're going to have Jared Bynum and Noah Horkler. The future looks pretty bright for them. So I think they're going to be back in the tournament here sooner rather than later. You know, Duke, I mean, I'm going to guess that maybe you're not high on Duke at that price, but, you know, Pipkins, maybe Reeves, who's the play here for Providence? We'll get to Northwestern in a minute, but let's talk about Providence.
Definitely with you on Pipkins. I'm not really sure where to go after that. They're definitely going guard heavy right now, you know, with Watson out. I do have some interest in Emmett Holt just because I know how talented he had been. I know he's been dealing with some health issues the last couple of years. Feels like he's been in college for 10 years already. So to see him playing well is nice. I don't really know what to do with, you know, there's so many guards, and guards generally just take all the usage, right? That we just don't know who's going to put up all the shots. You know, one game we see Reeves get double-digit shots up, the next game he only takes three. We know about Malik White. I'm definitely not touching David Duke at 7,800. I don't care. And, I mean, Diallo probably gets there, but I just don't know. You know, like, he does have to get all the rebounding in. You know, he's gotten to where he is at because he's also blocked six shots already this year. So I don't know. I just know that Northwestern is not a very strong offensive team. So there's going to be quite a few rebounds. There's probably going to be some steals available. But I don't know. I don't really like the pricing too much on Providence, especially if they're going to only score in the 60s.
Yeah, and pretty much the same can be said for Northwestern. You know, there are some spots where you can look at, like, Pat Spencer is expected to be, you know, a very productive player for them, 4-8. You know, that looks good. Anthony Gaines, we know he's, you know, he didn't have a very good first game. He was coming off an injury, minutes restrictions, things of that nature. 4-3 would normally be a good price for him, but this, you know, isn't really a good spot. Miller Kopp at 4-6, who I do think is going to take a next step this year. He's going to normally be a good play at that price. But maybe not here. And then Pete Nance at 7-9 is just completely ludicrous. Like, the DK pricing algo is just out of control with that price. And then you got A.J. Turner at 4-3, who, you know, was serviceable last year. But a lot of mediocrity in this game where nothing really excites me outside of Pipkins. Maybe Malik White, you know, if I think he's going to shoot well. But yeah, it's a good call. It's there's not going to be a lot of fantasy production, but we know from prior years and joking that Northwestern games normally get ignored and then they go to overtime. So this would be the game to go to OT and whoever stacks it, you know, rakes. Pete Nance, tell me about Pete Nance. He's an exciting player. He's going to be really good, you know, down the road, but I don't think we're ready to pay 7-9 for him yet, are we?
I don't think we can pay 7-9 for him yet. I just, you know, he's not going to dominate the boards like he just did against Merrimack, even though they lost, you know, grabbing 12 rebounds. You know, he didn't block any shots, didn't pick up any steals or anything. I just, you know, maybe if he drops down into the low 6Ks for much of the year, he's probably going to be in play on some slates. But even then, like, you know, unlike the last couple of years where we had a couple, you know, like Law or something on Northwestern that we could consider, I don't know that we're going to have much for Northwestern this year. I mean, Gaines, once he shows he's completely healthy, he's going to be more expensive than 4-3. I am intrigued by Pat Spencer a little bit. I did draft him late in our dynasty. He played Division I lacrosse and decided that he wanted to transfer and play basketball this year as a grad transfer. And he apparently showed enough to be their starting point guard. you know, he put up 12 shot attempts in the first game. And from what I saw, their foreign tour over the summer, he was really strong for them. You know, he's one of their leading scorers pretty much the entire trip. That's kind of why I had taken him in the dynasty. Just because, you know, late in the dynasty draft, you don't really find starting guards available. So, you know, I guess there's a little bit of upside in his price at 4-8. Because he is a pretty strong, sturdy dude. And, you know, as the season goes on, he should get stronger, you know, as he's got more practice time and getting more shopped up. But yeah, I think at this point, I'd probably be surprised if the GPP winning lineup had Northwestern players in it tomorrow, if I'm being honest.
No, I'd agree with that. until they go to, you know, 00T or something crazy. But maybe that'll be a new trend,
right,
where lacrosse players transfer over to be basketball players, and it's just, you know, that's a new thing. All right, let's move over to Marquette, which should be an exciting game. Marquette versus Purdue. KenPom has a 71-70 in favor of Marquette. 90th in tempo to start. Purdue slow 302. We'll start with Marquette. That, you know, Marcus Howard is back. Everybody who even casually watches college basketball will know Marcus Howard. And his first game there against Mighty Loyola Maryland, he had 38 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal. Shot 70% from downtown on 10 triple attempts. So that's you know, that's the Marcus Howard that gets me excited about daily fantasy when he's on the slate. And, you know, I thought that maybe he would, you know, this year seed a few more shots, you know, with Kobe McEwen being eligible, you know, and a pretty good scorer. But, you know, seeing that first game, I kind of came to my senses and thought, no, this is still Marcus Howard of yesteryear. He's going to be taking all the shots in the world that he wants. And, you know, rumor has it that one of the driving forces behind the Housers leaving was the fact that Marcus came back for his senior year. So I don't know if there's any truth to that, but you know, he's still going to be the guy that takes a ton of shots, high, heavy usage, 46% usage in that first game. You know, this is, if you listen to the show, you know all about Marcus Howard. In terms of pay-ups tomorrow, if you're paying up for one guy on either site, it's certainly going to be, you know, Marcus Howard. So no arguments here from me about that. I am interested to see how McEwen develops on this team. You know, he's 5'9 to start. I'm pretty interested in him at that price. I expect him to play roughly 30 minutes a game ordinarily, and he is going to contribute across, you know, every category you can think of without probably blocks, but points, rebounds, assists, and steals. Did foul out of their last game, which is kind of Marquette's calling card. They've got several guys who do that, so I hope he doesn't fall into that, you know, type of thing where he is a guy you can't count on because of fouls, but he's certainly somebody I want to look at going forward. Skara Nim is back with his guard forward eligibility, starting out the season 5'7". He's normally in that 4K range, last guy in. You know, we joked about on the show last year, you've got that salary, you can talk yourself into, oh, Nim, he's going to play 30 minutes. You know, he can get me 20, and then suddenly he's got 13, and you're trying to scrape to that 15. You know, a good start for him, 24 fantasy points, 11 points, 4 boards, 4 assists, a block, and a steal. I don't know that I'm going to pay that high of a price to start out with him to begin with. Samir Torrance is somebody at 3-3, can't use him yet, but remember that name. I think he's going to be a guy that is serviceable maybe much later down in the, you know, this season goes. Jace Johnson, grad transfer for them. He's not going to play yet, still nursing injury. You have old friend Ed Morrow there at 4K. Brendan Bailey at 3-6 is a guy that Saws kind of brought up and said will be useful this year. And then Jamal Cain at 4-5. So those are the guys that really you know, get useful minutes and throughout the year will get 20 to 25 fantasy points, but they're also going to have games where they get 5 to 10 fantasy points. So there's going to be a lot of that. You know, outside of Marcus Howard, I don't think there's going to be, and then obviously Theo John, but I don't think there's going to be anyone that, you know, outside of Howard where we can lock and load them in our lineups and know that they're going to, you know, give us a solid floor day in and day out. I would love to play Theo John ordinarily just because of his block upside and everything else, but 7-3 is too high. I think that him and you know, Matt Harms are probably going to be bodying each other up quite a bit in this game, and I wouldn't be surprised to see both on the bench very quickly because of foul issues. You know, Harm 7-1 is an appealing price ordinarily, but in this matchup, I probably can't do that. And I think that we're going to see, and T-Will, you know, Travion Williams is another guy that's going to have foul risk. I think all year long it's going to be a situation where Harms goes off and maybe T-Will, you know, he's in the background. And a situation where Harms gets a foul trouble like he did last game and T-Will kind of takes, you know, center stage. So that's going to be one of those tilting things, you know, even though there's a big price difference amongst them. Harms does have a better floor, but those fouls are going to be something that tilts us all year long, and those guys really don't play on the floor together very often, so it's kind of tough. I am in love with Aaron Wheeler. I went out of my way when I joined the Dynasty League this year to get him in a trade, and, you know, he's 5'7". He's a guy that I'm probably going to use tomorrow. Until his price rises above 6K, I think he's still fine to use because he's going to see 30-plus minutes. His shooting hasn't really been there that you know, the first game he shot 50%, but I think he can do, you know, higher volume 50% shooting. He shot only 16% last game. If his shot's able to fall with the ability of, you know, his peripheral stats, there it's going to be a big-time, you know, fantasy score, because even with him shooting, you know, 16% at 4 points, he had 24 fantasy points on DraftKings last game because he had 4 steals, because he had a block, and because he had 7 rebounds. So I get really excited about Aaron Wheeler. He was the guy last year towards the end of the season that we were able to use a little bit, and even in the tournament, and he really panned out. So I'm a big fan of his. I like him a lot. He's somebody I want to use. Evan Cordeaux is Boudreaux is just not a usable option. Now, to give you an example of DraftKings super reactive pricing, Sasha Stefanovic came back from a minor injury in that game against Texas, played 28 minutes, was hot as the sun, shot 57% from long range on 7 attempts, 24 fantasy points. He goes from 3.1K all the way up to 5.2K. I have no idea why you would ever pay 5.2K for Sasha, especially this early. Now, if, you know, a month goes by and he's continuously doing this, then okay, we can talk about 5-2, but we're not going to pay a 2K increase on a guy who's ordinarily not going to be shooting 57% from the field. I am hugely interested in Noel Eastern. His price dropped down to 5-6. You know, he was up at 6-8 to start the season, and they've dropped him down to 1,200 in 2 games. Still playing 30 minutes. You know, shooting has kind of been suspect, but we know that about him. He's not a very gifted scorer. He is a very gifted rebounder. He's always around the ball. He's a capable passer and ordinarily a lockdown defender. He didn't have any block or steal numbers last game, but he will contribute in those categories ordinarily. So at 5-6, that's a really hard fade for me. Eric Hunter at 5-6 is an easy fade, however. I know he's getting 30 minutes in the last 2 games, and he went off at 3-9 for 31 fantasy points. People chased that in the Texas game when he went up to 6-3 and he only had 14 fantasy points. Ordinarily, his floor is going to be right around that 10 to 15 number. He is a better shooter than Aaron Wheeler, but he just doesn't contribute in the other categories as consistently yet to be paying that kind of price for him. Just my opinion on it. And then Proctor, who's 7K, he's, you know, came in from High Point. He was at Iona before that, stepping into that, you know, Carson Edwards chuck role. It looks to me with the way that Purdue's offense is, whoever is playing point guard or handling the ball, is going to put up stats. So we saw in the first game Proctor and Hunter do primarily all of the ball handling over Eastern even, and they were scoring at will, getting stats, you know, this that type of offense. Proctor has double-digit shots in each of the first 2 games. You can, you know, consistently expect him to do that, but I don't think that it's going to be a situation where he and Marcus Howard get into shoot-off. But, you know, he obviously could have that GPP upside. I just don't see him as a main team option. They really want Isaiah Thompson to be a thing, but he has looked awful in the first 2 games. I don't think that he's going to continue to get any minutes. And then Brandon Newman is a guy that you know, highly rated recruit coming in, but it sounds like he may end up redshirting to start the year. So for me, I'm all over Eastern. I'm all over, you know, my guy Wheeler. I'll have some Harm shares, but I'm pretty much fading everybody else on Purdue's side. And yes, I will have Marcus Howard exposure. This is a fun game. What are you doing with it, Russell?
Very similar to you. I will have a share or two of Proctor, just because, you know, he definitely was a high-level scorer at High Point. So, you know, there are times where I go off of the theory, like, you know, ball handlers going off against each other, especially against Marcus Howard. They can kind of turn into a thing. So, especially if I'm going to stack this game and hope for a lot of scoring, I'll definitely get some Proctor. I'm going to have to unfortunately decline on using Theo John at 7,300. But I probably won't use much Harms just because I don't like the interior matchup for either team really. And Wheeler definitely is going to be kind of an automatic plug in for my main or cash builds. I end up getting to cash at 5,700. Probably him and Eastern both will make it in there. And if Eastern lines up against Anim, I probably won't have any Sakar at all, just because I do respect Eastern's defense enough, because he's athletic and long and can cause some problems. So I don't know. It feels like a game that I should have a lot of interest in, but I just don't – like, I don't know what to do with guys like Jamal Cain and Trevion Williams, even Stefanovic, if he's going to play that many minutes. But, I'd rather go up to Eastern 400 more than Stefanovic.
Yeah, because, I like I said, I'm going to require more than one game sample on Sasha before I start paying that price for him. Looking at FanDuel, Eastern's only 5K, which seems really juicy, and then McEwen at 5-1 also looks pretty juicy. I think you're right. Eastern will probably end up guarding Sakar, but he may end up on McEwen also, which does give me a little pause about him. But those FanDuel prices are, a little pretty appealing to me. And then last game here, Oklahoma State versus Charleston. Again, for some reason, DraftKings neglected to put this on here. Would have been an absolute lock for me. I would have paid any price they asked for Grant Riller. You know, as my kryptonite is these mid-major scoring studs. KenPom has a 75-68 in favor of Oklahoma State. I'll have to look at the Vegas line on that because I would be willing to take Charleston as a dog. They're 280s in pace, Oklahoma State 87. Grant Riller, if you don't know him, get to know him. John Rothkins would say, you should have already bought stock. He's a very gifted scorer. He was on a slate last year on DraftKings, so I don't know why they're choosing to ignore it now. But, a very high usage player, very high shot rate. Pull up some numbers for you guys. 31% usage rate, 25% shot rate, 38% three-shooter, shooting 63% from the field, 91% free-throw shooter, draws almost 10 fouls per game, 26% assist rate. I mean, this guy is a do-it-all player, going to be most likely a conference player of the year, if not first-team all-conference for sure. I would be willing to pay what FanDuel is asking at 7-6. I think he's going to do exactly whatever it is that he wants to do against them. In terms of everyone else, it's a little, tougher. You got Brevin Galloway there at 5-2, Sam Miller at 4-9. Those are decent prices for those guys because they have 20 fantasy point upside. But I do think Oklahoma State's defense is going to be better this year. The Oronai, who's 7-1 on FanDuel. Whoa. And Cameron McGriff, who's 6K. Never would have thought that would happen, right? The Oronai, higher price than Cam McGriff, but he is having a better season so far. And then, you got guys like Lindy Waters, Isaac Likeel back, Thomas DeSigawa, all the normal guard characters who are capable of putting up 40 on any given night, but also 12. So not looking forward to that too much. But, yeah, it should be a pretty fun game. I think it'll be closer than what KenPom is projecting early. I think in terms of plays, it's Miller for me with some Galloway Miller. And I think you can play, a little bit of Lindy Waters and Isaac Likeel for sure, even though he's 6'9 on FanDuel. It's a little high. And then Cam McGriff at 6K, I don't think he's going to continue to be so, passive, it looks like, going forward. We've seen his upside in prior games. I'm a little surprised to see him, not be so good. It's not even foul trouble. He's just not getting the shot rate that you would think he would. Still, his usage was 28% last game, but he just didn't do a whole lot outside of 12 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, which is a good line. But we know he's capable of much more. Now, you own Cam McGriff in season long. What do you make of his start, and what are you doing with this game?
So, I guess, as far as what I'm doing with this game, I absolutely love this game. I actually tweeted not too long ago about how I was really annoyed that DK did not have this. Yes, I do own McGriff in Dynasty, but I also own Yor and I and Ike. So I think part of it with McGriff is the fact that, Isaac and I have gotten better, right? They're freshmen last year that showed glimpses, and now they've kind of taken a little step forward and are playing pretty well. Plus, you still have Lindy Waters there who, last year he just would randomly have a 40 fantasy point performance or something. So, I think as the season goes on, he's probably somebody that's going to get stronger. As some of the other guys kind of wear down a little bit, he could be pacing himself, I don't know for sure because it's not like I had conversations with him or have really researched in-depthly. But to me, it just could be somebody that is kind of deferring early season. And then when the lights turn on, he might step it up a little bit. just because, you know, it's what, it was Oral Roberts and then University of Missouri, Kansas City as well. So, like, I guess the opponents didn't really need him to step up. Because I know, like, Anai and then Isaac had a had some strong games in there. So, I don't know. At 6K, I'm going to have quite a few shares. And with Charleston, it's really just Grant for me because, you know, he just seems like the only guy that's done it before. The cast around him isn't the same as it was in the last couple of years, you know, where they had a strong secondary scorer. But I will definitely have multiple pieces of this game.
Yeah, I think you have to. Okay, well, I'm just catching up now. It looks like Trace Tinkle figured things out, Razzle. He got 46.5 fantasy points. Our guy, Donnie Tillman, hung 30. He hung 30 on him, Razzle. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It was a good night for your boy. It's a good night for your boy. I was scared to look. I know you told me he was doing well, and I was like, I don't want to know. I don't want to know. I was really worried. But it looks like it ended up being a good day. Ethan Thompson, 37.5. Holy hell, I should have had more Christian Doolittle. 50 fantasy points for
Doolittle
him.
Doolittle went north. Yeah.
Jesus. So, and you know, one of the other moves I was considering was Elijah Mitchell Long over Pierre-Foy. Obviously, different positions, but I could have put Tinkle in the forward instead of utility. Mitchell Long, of course, ends with 25. Looks like that game went OT, which is funny. But, yeah, his 25 fantasy points to Pierre-Foy's 8 would have been nice. But some mistakes were made, but it looks like overall the core plays that that we ran were good. So happy about that. Tinkle is the good high price play of the day, so that worked out. But yeah, just to close out this slate, I think, like you said, on FanDuel, owning multiple pieces of Charleston, Oklahoma State is going to be the move. Now, one thing I like to do on my content, and we'll do it here just for fun, I always list a loss of the slate, a bust of the slate, and then a sneak of the slate. Now, I will go ahead and do, you know, I'll start so you have a minute to think. Because my bust of the slate today was obviously it wasn't quite right, but it was Chris Likes, who only had 17 fantasy points, so semi-bust. I think Pierre-Foy was obviously the bust of the slate. You know, Locke was, for me, was Najee Marshall, which, you know, is a little underwhelming, still made value. And then the sneak was Isaac Okoro, who was higher owned, it looks like, in cash, but in the high-dollar stuff, he was like 18%. So I can still consider that a little sneaky. Now for this particular slate, we'll go off of DraftKings, I guess, games. So you can include Charleston if you want, but I mean, Griller for me would be the lock. But I think, you know, obviously going Marcus Howard for the lock would probably be a little too easy, so I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go with Carlson from UConn. It's a little risky, but I think that he's going to smash on St. Joe's as long as he doesn't get into foul trouble. So I think he's definitely a lock. I think bust-wise, we can just go off of pricing. I think that I can say Pete Nance is most certainly going to be the bust of the slate. And then sneak of the slate, I think people are still sleeping on my man DJ Carton. I think because of the fact that there's more name-brand players like Al Gilbert around his price, that he will go largely ignored. So that's going to be my sneak. What say you, my friend?
Lock, I think I am going to go with our boy Pipkins at 6,300 in that game. Now, bust, I mean, I could take the easy way out and just take Theo John, but that's way too obvious. So I'll kind of go on the other side and just go with Matt Harms. I just don't like the spot for him. With the big bodies of Marquette, with Theo John and with Ed Morrow yet. Sneak is, I think it'll be, so it's probably going to be one of two guys, and right now I can't figure out which of the two, but either E.J. Liddell or Gaffney from Ohio State. I think one of those two step up with the loss of Wesson and definitely pay off their cheaper price tag.
All right, I like it. Yeah, sounds good, man. All right, appreciate it. Where can people find you again, in case they don't know?
Twitter's at Arezzo11Grinds. Doing content daily now at DFS Army.
Sweet. All right, man. Appreciate you as always. Good luck tomorrow, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Good luck to you as well.
All right. Thank you very much to Razzle for coming on. I'm very pleased that we were able to finish the night strong. Main team on DraftKings hits 222.25. I know not the most highest score in the world, but when you have Purifoy bust and Pritchard underwhelming, and Brandon Mahane, the scrub from Texas A&M, that's a pretty good score. I'm happy. I see a lot of green tonight. I hope that we can continue to stay on this pace. Appreciate everybody who listened in. If you have questions, you can always find me on Twitter at dubdeuces85. My content is available now on rotocurve.com. You can find me in the marketplace under Waddell CBB Super Show Package. We have $10 weekly passes. You can sign up $32 for a month. And then we also have season passes available as well. We can talk to my man Josh about that if that's something you want to do. I owe my current subs one free week, because I said if Najee Marshall hit a three to send the game to overtime, I would give everybody a free week. What do you know it? About, I don't know, 10 seconds later, Najee Marshall hits a three to send it to overtime. Also owe some friends some beers. So I will be getting out of here. Good luck to everybody tomorrow. I appreciate everybody for the continued support. It's a lot of fun doing this. Full steam ahead. Take care. Good luck. And don't get Purifoy tomorrow.
Yeah. DA got that dope.